how about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's Jean-Lit Foot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Coffee and Football presented by Texas Electricity Ratings. I'm your host, Blake Monroe, where I'm joined each and every morning by Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton. Tell us where you're checking in from, what you're drinking, get your questions in. We'll get to those here in just a little bit. We got an action-packed show today, fellas. Texas softball head coach Mike White will be joining us fresh off the heels of punching their ticket to the national championship. And we also have another guest, Matt Hayes, from Saturdays Down South. He'll be joining us here in just a little bit. But first, 88 days till kickoff. Summer workouts have started yesterday. We're going to talk about that here in just a little bit, too, as well. Excuse me. But first, Jerry, let's talk about recruiting, because there's a lot going on there, as usual.
Yeah, it's the this weekend officially starts the official visit weekends for Texas. Now, there were a lot of guys we mentioned last week out and about around the country making visits, which that means fan base is going to joy mode and panic mode after one visit, but the process continues through June. So we'll talk about some of that right now. We'll do a recruiting speed dating. I've started a bunch of questions. Bring your questions. But we'll start with seven official visitors this weekend. Myron Charles added to that list. Texas changed him from June 14th to 16th to June 7th through 9th. So Myron Charles, four-star D lineman out of Port Charlotte, comes in this weekend. When I was by that school in mid-May, I thought it was Florida State and Texas top two. He visited Florida last week, and he goes to Miami as well, then Florida State June 21st through 23rd. Jeff Banks and Kenny Baker tag-teaming that recruitment for the Longhorns. Josiah Sharma, four-star defensive lineman out of Folsom, will also be in town this weekend. That is a Alabama-Texas battle. Oregon's probably running third there. But right now it looks like Alabama or Texas for him. So Texas will have two of the top tackle targets on the board, two of those top five, six guys on the board in for official visits this weekend. Then you have Dorian Brewer and Caleb Chester, two of the top four corner prospects on the board for Texas. They will be on campus this weekend amongst those seven official visitors. Then Michael Terry, who's a popular name on the chat. I actually spoke with somebody on Michael Terry right before coming on the air, and the belief is it's A&M or Texas for Michael Terry. And he visits Texas this weekend. He visits A&M next weekend. He already visited Oregon. He loves Oregon like most kids growing up. But when you and the family take that trip and you say, man, that's a long way and hard to get to and a long flight home, The uniforms don't look as nice over time at that point in time. Oregon's got – Dan Lanning's doing a great job, great program up there, but it's going to end up being too far. He won't go to Nebraska. Michael Terry will come down to A&M in Texas here, barring a major change the next two weekends in June. Both those schools are saying athlete. We think you can play four positions. Figure it out once you get here. I think A&M likes him at an edge outside backer, rush guy. I think Texas likes him as maybe Amari Nyblak, maybe an edge outside linebacker. So he wants to play wide out. That's not really what he is. He's 220 long term. He's 217, 220 pounds right now. He's going to be 235 plus in time. That's not a guy you can keep the weight off of long term in these strength and conditioning programs. So seven official visitors. A lot of people want it. Brandon Brown, Zion Williams, very popular, obviously, because they just came off the LSU visit. There was a lot of chatter about Brandon Brown's going to flip and shut it down Monday in our industry. That's obviously not the case. Steve Sarkisian, Kenny Baker spoke with Brandon Brown, his mom and older brother, and a couple other people in that circle Monday night. They had a call about 6:20 p.m. Central time. The official visit process continues. He goes to Tennessee this weekend, Texas the 14th through 16th, and likely, as we report on Texas Football reported first last week, likely Miami June 21st through 23rd. It'll come down to LSU, Bo Davis relationship, and Texas. It's where it's going to come down to unless Miami makes some big unforeseen push. But I think he's going to play in the SEC. Then Zion Williams is announcing July 4th. LSU was one. Texas was two going into the visit last week in LSU. Nothing's changed there. Again, Bo Davis, longest relationship there. He's going to visit Texas June 21st through 23rd. He'll be at A&M this weekend, which will chip away at LSU a little bit too, being at A&M. And I think the thing is, I jokingly say gird up your loins, but it's big boy recruiting in the SEC. Each week coming out of these visits, what you're going to – I mean, if we had a recruiting bingo card, it would be great this month. You're going to recruit, but you're going to hear big push, silent commit, big-time leader, feels at home, blah, blah, blah. You're going to hear it all. And you're going to hear it all from all those visits because the great players don't have bad visits. When's the last time somebody had a bad visit? Albert Hollis in 99 at Texas? I mean, the bad visits aren't few and far between. So coming out of these visits, it's all going to be rainbows and unicorns. And there's going to be the emotional highs coming off the visits. People are doing their job. That's the way it should be. But we'll see how all this stuff plays out. Texas won't get them all. Texas will get their share. And I think Texas will be in the running for a fourth straight top five class.
Hell yeah, Jerry Hamilton. Hell yeah. That's what I got to say. That was good stuff, man. That's the way you want to start your day.
You talked to recruits for 20 years. How many times have they ever said, I had a crappy visit? It was terrible.
Only if the team did not emphasize them or was clearly de-recruiting them.
Right.
Did they say that? Rainbows and unicorns aside, I think it's interesting because, Jerry, I wrote an article this morning. You said it really well, I thought. You said, gird your loins. You know, it is SEC recruiting, so you're going to see Brandon Brown have a great visit to LSU. You're going to also – it's big boy recruiting, too. You're going to see Riley Petajon and DeCorey Moore have great visits at Ohio State. Texas is recruiting elite players across the board right now that are going to other elite programs. Those programs are elite also for a reason as well. And so I think that, you know, the old pushover recruiting some people got used to at times, I wouldn't say they're entirely used to it, but it's certainly one of those things where I can sit here and say from the outside looking in, Texas had several guys that were just automatics. I don't think there's going to be as many automatics as Texas tries to even go further with its into the SEC and tries to recruit even higher level guys. That's great stuff there. Wow, look at this, guys. This is just amazing. Thank you, Jack Lala. We appreciate you. Jerry, you, Rod, and CJ, great last night. Interesting question to me. Who had the biggest hit in UT history? I offer Tommy Nobis's hit on Joe Namath at the goal line in 64 championship game. I think that may have been the most impactful hit, to be fair, Jack. Was it the biggest hit? I think that's a question. Namath said he had never been hit harder, even in the NFL, than Tommy Nobis sticking it.
Well, let's throw it out to the chat because we're going to have thousands of people joining us. So yesterday on the winning drive, Rod Babers, CJ, and myself, I kind of brought up the topic. Who has the most important hit in Texas history? We were talking about Michael Huff possibly being inducted in the College Football Hall of Fame. And so Michael Huff was the answer. We also had Marcel Darius on Colt McCoy. is the most important hits in Texas history. Somebody brought up Stoney Clark, Oklahoma, to win the Red River game. Obviously, goal line stand there. But so Texas fans out there, hey, we had a few Oklahoma fans on that chat yesterday, on our live stream yesterday as well. Who most important hit in Texas history? I know the Oklahoma fans won't go with Stoney Clark. Now, Alabama fans will probably say Marcel Darius.
Loudest one I've ever heard in DKR. Not the Tony Brackett's hit. I've seen a couple people mention that. The Tony Brackett's hit was he obliterated the Tech kicker. I mean, obliterated him. I felt sorry for the guy. That's how bad it was, but not really. I didn't really feel sorry for him. But no, the hardest hit I ever heard in my life in a football stadium was Bryant Westbrook on Randy Kinder. I literally thought he might have killed Randy Kinder on the football field against Notre Dame. I mean, I'm not kidding. And so that's interesting. Most impactful, though, has to be
Michael Huff.
It wasn't a national championship. It was just the Orange Bowl, if I recall, when they beat Namath.
I don't know. I mean, that's good stuff. I mean, may have to ask and employ some other thoughts on that.
Well, so I want to clarify what we were asking is not the hardest hit, the most important hit in Texas football history. That was so because we were talking about Mike Huff. Mike Huff's stop on Lindell White when Reggie Bush was over chewing his nails, asking why he wasn't in the game.
Here's one. Hey, this is a good one that I want to get to. Funniest one from Vance Newland was Richard Peavy on Marcus Dupree. It literally did end Marcus Dupree's college career. He went out and never was the same again. Went on to the USFL after that, and he was all world as a true freshman. Then came into his sophomore year a little overweight, and Peavy, put him back in his place a little bit. I think he's now in Arkadelphia, Mississippi, or wherever, Philadelphia, Mississippi.
Digs on Mahomes was a fun hit.
Yeah.
Definitely.
By the way, Tech fans thought that was a dirty hit. There was nothing dirty about that hit.
I'll tell you another one that was in a very impactful. I mean, the Michael Huff one and the Marcell Dareus, obviously in national championship games, come to mind. The two most impactful hits for Texas football. Not hardest, most impactful. But I'll tell you, that USC game was crazy. Cedric Griffin's hit on the fullback that knocked him out of the game was a bit of a tone setter in that game. And it's not – it's talked about because Michael Huff's play on 4th-and-1, but Cedric Griffin kind of set a tone when he knocked the fullback out of that game, which nowadays Cedric Griffin would have been ejected for, by the way.
Yep. That was on David Kirtman, and I'll tell you why that was important. Kirtman got knocked out of the game.
Yep.
On 2nd-and-10 on that final drive that USC had, they threw a pass in the flat to the fullback. And it wasn't Kirtman. It was their second string fullback. And the guy dropped it kind of a little bit below his knees. I'm thinking Kirtman may have made that catch and made some plus yardage to get USC set up in a better situation on 3rd down.
This one too, Cedric Griffin on the tight end.
Yeah. Ryan Hemby.
There is no USC game without it.
It's true stuff. Good stuff. Hey, before we get going, I need to say thank you to our sponsor. Our sponsor on Tuesday mornings is our friends at TexasElectricityRatings.com. For those of y'all still living in Texas and in the major cities with deregulated electricity like Dallas and Houston, you understand that the deregulated electricity market can be confusing. Texas Electricity Ratings is a shopping website that lets you compare prices, read customer reviews, and find a good electricity plan that fits your needs. It also filters out a lot of the gimmicky plans on websites like Power to Choose that trick customers into expensive bills. So if you're in the market for a new electricity plan, shop TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all your electricity needs. Hook them. Guys, if you're in Dallas, I don't know what to say about the weather of late, by the way. I looked at, and I say that because I don't know what plan you would choose right now for electricity. The weather in Dallas has been amazingly crazy over the last month and a half, 2 months. So stay safe out there.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's Jean-Luc Foote.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
By the way, UT boy voted for himself. I like that.
UT's boy hit on an OU fan. There you go.
Guys, ESPN came out with new FBI rankings yesterday. Texas number 3 in those rankings. Interestingly enough, they also have Texas strength of schedule as number 10 overall. But here you can see those rankings. The the percentage to win the conference, 24.2%. To make the playoffs, 67.8%. And to make the national championship, 20.6%. What do y'all think?
Well, I think that the chance, if you zoom in on the playoff stuff there, Blake, it's amazing. Georgia right now at an almost 80% chance to make the playoffs.
Well, they're in the best spot because obviously ranked number one. I'm not beyond the obvious. They play at Ole Miss, Alabama, and Texas. So they could drop one of those games and go 11-1, and it doesn't affect them getting in the playoff. They have a difficult road schedule, which is going to enhance their strength of schedule, tougher schedule in the last couple of years for Georgia. But and they'll drop one of those games. If they go undefeated on this schedule, I mean, you know, good for them. Tip of the duck hat to them. But, I mean, look, they'll drop one of those three road games. But at 11-1, I put them in a 90% chance to make the playoff. I mean, they have to literally get upset, lose two of those road games, maybe get upset by Clemson to not make the playoff. I mean, that they're in a great, great spot, and it helps when you have all that talent. But the interesting thing about the top four, they play each other this year. Georgia's at Texas, Ohio State's at Oregon, and both play each other in conference play, which is crazy to me. I think Oklahoma is high. That's a lot of respect for Oklahoma.
Yeah, right. And,
you know, that puts pressure, you know, that a rebuilt offensive line with Bill Biedenbaugh, that's not the most impactful thing. I think they'll be fine. Biedenbaugh's a really good coach. Jackson Arnold's going to have to play at a very high level as a first-year starting quarterback for Oklahoma to against the schedule they have to navigate to have that type of season. So, if Jackson Arnold plays up to that level, then tip your hat to him. But as a first-year starting quarterback against that schedule, they have a tougher schedule in Texas. That'd be a little surprising to me. But Brent Venables, year three defensively, will probably have the best defensive unit he's had. Oklahoma's not going to be the 77th ranked defense in the country this year. They're going to improve on that. How much they improve, we'll see. But they certainly won't be that poor defensively. And if they are, that they'll go 6-6.
Hey, we also, before we get going to the next topic, we also need to say rest in peace to Larry Allen, the Cowboy great. My kids still can't believe him running down that interception highlight versus the Saints. A long-term elite player in football for the Dallas Cowboys passed away suddenly on vacation down in Mexico on Sunday. Our thoughts and prayers go out to him. Certainly one of the best offensive linemen of all time. Maybe he really was that good. I saw a video. I was watching videos of him yesterday, just highlights. Jerry bench pressed 700 pounds one time. 700. I mean, Casey Anthony would be in all of that.
Yeah.
By the way,
he really would. You know what's crazy is probably as athletic and devastating a run blocker as you'll ever see. Right? We may never see anything like that. But came out of Compton, California. Was not an academic qualifier, went to four high schools in 4 years, had it really rough growing up, had to navigate his way through. Has anybody been drafted out of Sonoma State since Larry Allen? I mean, look, and here's the crazy thing about that too, Bobby. In the days of Prop 48, he probably wouldn't have been a Nebraska Cornhusker.
Yep.
I mean, probably. So that's crazy how the kind of times have changed as far as the rules for getting into college. The Prop 48, things like that. And I say it would have been a Nebraska Cornhusker because Nebraska got a lot of really good players out of SoCal that were Lawrence Phillips that were Prop 48 guys. So I'm guessing Nebraska may have been a good bet for him. It could have been anybody, but it's just crazy to think about how he couldn't qualify, went the JUCO route, went to Sonoma State, and ended up being one of the best guards in the history of the NFL.
All right, guys, we have a special guest with us this afternoon or this morning. Jeez, this afternoon. Jerry's got me so charged up from the recruiting update that I'm ready to go forward to the afternoon. That's how far it is. From Saturday Down South, our friend Matt Hayes. Matt, you and I spent some time in Destin last week together at the SEC Media Days. Matt, a national writer, reporter for Saturday Down South. Welcome to the show, bud.
Good morning, fellas. What's going on?
You know, we are talking a little best hits in Texas football history, as well as recruiting this morning. But we wanted to have you in here. Matt, you're based out of Jacksonville, and welcome Texas to the SEC. We're going to start talking to you as often as you'll have us. Tell us what you think of Texas and Oklahoma coming to the SEC.
It's going to be wild. No doubt about that. It's going to be wild. I look at these two clearly elite programs, clearly spend a lot of money on the sport, clearly are invested in the sport. It's going to take time, and it's not just, you know, they're joining the SEC. They have the ability, the talent level. the wherewithal to win big quickly in the SEC. But I think it's the idea of, you know, you've never been to these stadiums. You've never been in this situation where you're playing this type of level week after week. That really is, I think, what they're going to have to get used to. And for anyone to say that their programs or their players aren't at the same level is just ridiculous, because they are. It's just the idea of playing in this situation, in this process, week after week, and understanding that you got to bring it. There's no doubt about it. You have got to bring it. And it's more than just the players, these venues. And I know you guys have probably been to most of these venues, but, man, they are crazy on Saturdays. It's difficult to win on the road in the league. Very difficult.
Matt, you're also down in Florida. I want to ask you, one of the things we've talked about here is this lawsuit. Jaden Rashada, the quarterback out of Georgia, suing Billy Napier and employees of the University of Florida, or ex-employees, over a NIL deal gone wrong, essentially. It right. looked at the time when Rashada backed out of his commitment to Florida like, I mean, it looked ugly in the press. You know that. I mean, a lot of things came to light. Oh, they promised us this much. None of it came true. Napier said to go ahead and sign, we'll take care of you, et cetera. You know, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, where do you come out on Florida's situation there as it relates to Rashada and maybe just NIL as a whole and how it's affecting what goes on with college football right now?
Okay, so let's go all the way back to the beginning. First off, I think NIL is fantastic for players. I think they deserve it. They deserve to earn money off their name, image, and likeness. And the fact that the NCAA for 150 years somehow said we have your name, image, and likeness for perpetuity when you sign a scholarship. I don't know how the courts didn't evolve earlier in this, but that's another story for another time. Anyway, I think it's fantastic. The problem with it was the NCAA had 18 months between when they knew the NIL date was coming. When they knew that July date was coming, I believe it was 22, right? Is that right?
21.
State of Florida, State of California initially said, we don't care what you do, our guys can get on NIL deals. And then eventually everybody else eventually followed. So they had 18 months from then and did nothing. Didn't figure it out. Did literally nothing. Okay. And not only that, not only do they open the barn doors with NIL, within a month, they open the barn door on, what the heck? We'll give them a free transfer year two. And then all of a sudden, it's literally the wild, wild west. There are no rules, and you can transfer one free year, which eventually down the road becomes a chance for transfer whenever you want, because we knew once that happened, that also wasn't going to be allowed to stay either, to stick the old transfer rules. Remember those where you had to sit out a year? So I blame the NCAA for literally a lack of foresight, a lack of idea of what they're doing, how they were doing it, how it would impact the sport, what the unintended consequences were. I got to say this again, they had 18 months to figure this out, or at least put some kind of, this buzzword of theirs, guardrails on these things. And they didn't do it. They just opened the door and said, everybody get after whatever you got to do. Now, going to Jaden Rashada in Florida, you are literally in a situation of he said, he said. Now, I will say this, Florida says they're good with what they've done. Billy Napier said he feels good about what they've done. Scott Strickland says he feels good about what they've done. You know, what wouldn't they say? But I will say this, if Rusty Harden is taking this case, there's legs to it. So I would say it's going to be very interesting to see this thing play out and see what happens or what kind of settlement they come to. But this thing is far from over, man.
Hey, Matt, thank you very much for joining us. I had a question. I know you talk to a lot of head coaches, number of head coaches in the SEC. What are their thoughts, without giving names away, we know the business. What are their general thoughts on what's going on in college football right now? NIL, unlimited transfers, which I think is the big one. The signing days conflicting with the portal. I mean, just all that. What are the thoughts you're getting from head coaches?
You know, I think we as, reporters and writers like to focus on the calendar and the idea of how it's making things crazy. And it is to an extent. Coaches really – they want players to earn. They don't mind that either. Their whole thing is player movement. That's their whole thing. So if they could somehow get a hold of player movement, they don't care about anything else, because player movement to them is roster management. How do I deal with my roster? How do I know who's going to be on my roster? How do I know who's leaving? How do I know when they're leaving? That's the big issue they have. It's not money. It's not so much recruiting. It's not so much signing days. It's player movement. And as recently as what? This was like 3 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, the NCAA just said, screw it. You can go whenever you want now. And which, you know, if you're a football coach, you're thinking this is ridiculous. This is, I'm literally recruiting my roster every single week of the year.
Yeah.
So I think that's their problem more than anything, Jerry, honestly. And I think when you look at it, if you start to look at it 30,000 feet away, you kind of understand what they're talking about. Now, you could also say, look, these guys get $10 million a year figured out. And I've said that many times. And they've said that to me many times. Look, we get paid a lot of money to figure this thing out, so we got to figure it out. But it's definitely a difficult obstacle if you're talking about you've got to recruit your team, you've got to recruit high school recruits, you've got to recruit the portal, you've got to recruit grad transfers. And all of these guys can leave whenever they want, and they all want money.
Bobby, you're muted.
Yeah, I got you now. I had a question for you.
Bob, you're not one of those guys, are you, man? Where like somebody's gonna tell you you're muted.
I need to be told that sometimes, to be honest with you. That's what my wife says, at least. Hey, this is a question for you. I've got a little speed dating, as Jerry likes to call it, questions for you.
All right.
Texas new to the SEC. This is for Texas fans, from your opinion, okay?
Okay.
What's your favorite stadium in the SEC?
Oh, it's not even close. Tiger Stadium at LSU. Okay. At night is just ridiculous.
Okay.
It's before the game even starts. Like that band comes on the field and they hit the first few bars of Tiger Rag. That place is just electric. Electric. Where do you guys go there?
Okay. All right. Best fans.
Best like fans?
Fans, yeah.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with Auburn. I'll go with Auburn.
All right. Worst fans.
Oh, I mean, I would say hands down Florida. Not even
hands down Florida.
Not even really close, actually.
Why is that?
I mean, they're very passionate. They are very passionate. That place is crazy too, man. I mean, that the Swamp at night, also just a phenomenal atmosphere. They're just very, very passionate, and they're very, you know, very vocal. Let's just put it that way. They're very vocal.
Quick to make decisions on coaches.
It's, you know, the funny thing is you know, the fan base gets grief for that. But I mean, if you look, go all the way back to once Steve Spurrier left, you know, you look at the hires. Ron Zook was a guy that Jeremy Foley took a chance on. It did not work out. Urban Meyer, Jeremy Foley outbid Notre Dame for, or outmaneuvered, whatever you want to call it. Outmaneuver is probably the better word for it. And then it's just, I mean, Muschamp got run out after, what, I think, 4 years. And the president and the AD were both in tears when they were firing him because they didn't want to fire him, but the fan base wanted him gone. And then Jim McElwain comes, and he's allegedly naked on a shark.
Yeah.
And then allegedly, you know, has death threats. Then Dan Mullen comes, and Dan, you know, does great things on the field, but Dan, like, starts a fight halftime against Missouri.
And he's anti-recruiting, which is hard.
Screams for the fans to pack the Swamp after they, you know, they go and lose at Texas A&M because the kid fumbles the ball when they were going in for a game-winning field goal, you know, and gets them on probation for the first time in 30 years. And then Billy Napier arrives, and, you know, they're 11-13 in the first 2 years. So a lot of this is just bad decisions when you think about it.
All right, so favorite stadium, LSU, best fans, Auburn, which is interesting, worst fans, Florida. Weirdest fans.
Weirdest. Wow. Weirdest fans.
This would be an obvious one to a Texas
this
fan.
This is obvious on the chat.
All right, I'll just say Texas A&M then.
There you go.
Make you guys feel better. I love it. Yeah. I love that campus. I love their traditions. I love Texas too. Believe me. Always. But I'll say Texas A&M to make you guys feel good. All right.
There you go. Thank you, man.
One of those hook 'em hats, Bobby. I like that.
Yeah, I like them, huh? Hey, I had a question for you on this.
You're taking the wrong way, but if you only have male cheerleaders, you're the weirdest fan base.
Yeah. Hey, and this is
yeah, but think of the female cheerleaders, those male cheerleaders get, right?
Hey, best team, and this is a little bit more asking you your history in the SEC. Best team you've seen in SEC history.
Wow. Best team.
Best team.
Wow. Man, the 2020 Alabama team was really good. Yeah. Best team. Wow, that's a good one. I would say between the 2019 LSU, 2020 Alabama, and 28 Florida. So I would say 2019 LSU.
Gotcha. With Joe Burrow, Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, I mean, that team was ridiculous. And by the end of defense, that was not that good early in the year. The defense played really well in that stretch of SEC championship game, two playoff games.
Who do you have? Who's your pick to win the SEC this year?
I don't know yet. I don't know yet, actually. I'm still vacillating on that. I think it's a group of teams. I think Texas is clearly in that group. That's still TBD, actually, because I want to delve a little bit further into Alabama and Kalen DeBoer and his impact on Jalen Milroe. And I think Georgia clearly is the favorite. Okay, there's no doubt about that. But I don't know yet. I don't know that I'm going to jump just yet on Georgia, because you know, once the armor's been pierced a little bit, like last year when it did, like they had no business losing that game to Alabama. Georgia should have won the national championship last year. They lost that game, and now it's, you know, has the armor been pierced a little bit? Is there a little doubt in there? They still have their best roster. There's no doubt about it, but I'm not willing to say it's, you know, like everybody, if you ask anybody, they're going to say, oh, Georgia. I'm not willing to go there yet. I'm still,
are you an
Ole Miss? I'm reserving the right. How about that? Until about August.
Are you an Ole Miss believer?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
me too.
There's just too much talent on that team. Those three receivers. I mean, they have the. I don't think that Jackson Dart can be Joe Burrow-ish, but they have the ability with that offense to score a lot of points and to stress defenses like LSU did in 2019, like Alabama did in 2020. And I think they'll be better defensively, especially off the edge, especially getting the quarterback. I love what Lane has done at Ole Miss, and I know there's a lot of people out there that still see Lane Kiffin, you know, as this petulant coach from Tennessee to USC. But man, you look at what he's done since he went to Nick and helped Alabama win a national championship. Went to FAU, kind of recalibrated that program, and what he's done at Ole Miss, just phenomenal, phenomenal. I think too much we look at Lane now as this, you know, quirky off the wall cat that he was early in his career, instead of him looking at him now as the guy who's always been a great coach, but now he's living well off the field, which is directly translating to the way his team's playing on the field.
Very interesting in Destin, Jerry and Matt and Blake, how subdued Kiffin was at the microphone. When the first time you see him at the mic, you expect him to be this loud, vociferous kind of character. He may have been the lowest talking coach we saw all week, frankly, Matt. I mean, he literally talked almost in whispers at the microphone, very subdued. He's definitely changed his persona somewhat. I don't know if he's changed his persona as much as he's just changed personally. A couple more questions for you. You're down in the state of Florida. Do you buy that Florida State is back under Mike Norvell? And what do you think of Mario Cristobal down in Miami? Is he going to finally turn the corner with the Hurricanes?
So FSU, it's hard to deny what Mike Norvell has done. I mean, before they had lost, right? They had lost the game to, I guess,
Jacksonville.
The last loss was to Georgia, so okay. They had won 19 in a row. And I was saying all along that team with a healthy Jordan Travis not only would have made the playoff, but could have done some damage, could have beaten anyone in that playoff. I don't know if they would have beaten Georgia with that team, but they certainly had a hell of a chance to. It's hard to ignore that. It's hard to ignore what he's done. The only problem that I have with what Mike has done there is they really rely on the portal. And I think they have to get back to, you know, the Halcyon days of FSU when they were building organically through high school recruiting, and they're getting there. They had a top seven class, I think, this past year. So they're getting there. And I'm also not a DJU fan. After his first year at Clemson, I was a big fan of his. I thought, wow, this cat is going to be a really good player. And you could see he threw the ball with confidence. He threw the ball on time, and then they couldn't protect him. And then it just all unraveled. And I think that's the problem. Then I watched that Florida State FSU game, and I was like, whoa, this doesn't look good. So if I'm an FSU fan, I'm a little concerned about that. Luke Kromeo is a terrific freshman they have there, quarterback, that I think will eventually be the guy, maybe even as soon as this year when they realize it's not going to work with DJU. As far as Miami, they're loaded with talent. Loaded. I think Cam Ward's the most underrated pick from the portal of anybody in college football. They have a chance to really take the next step, and if they don't, that's going to be a problem. I mean – you know, Mario is in a very similar situation as Billy Napier. That I keep saying this, and I think people are going to start to embrace it the closer we get to the beginning of the season. But that Miami-Florida game, holy cow, the implications in that game. It's almost like, you know, the old, you know, when we were growing up, the Texas Deaths matches in wrestling where, you know, the loser goes home. They, I'm telling you, man, they the loser of that game is in – A big hole with their fan base, a big hole with the idea of where the program is headed. And that's not a good place to be for either one of those guys that need to win.
I'm Matt Hayes, Saturday Down South. We appreciate you. We got more questions to ask you. I want to ask you if Billy Napier is going to make it out of this season alive. I want to talk to you about
I'll tell you that. This about Billy Napier, okay? This is what I've been saying now for months. He's either going to be the SEC coach of the year or he's going to be fired in late September. One or the other.
Gotcha. All right. That's Matt Hayes, Saturday Down South. Matt, we appreciate it. We'll bring you. Hopefully you can join us again sometime soon, man.
Sure. My pleasure. Thanks, fellas. Right.
Enjoy his work at Saturday Down South. That's Matt Hayes. I've known Matt of Matt for going on 25 plus years now. He used to work at the Sporting News as well, Jerry and Blake. Blake, you do us a favor before we get our next guest. White, softball coach, University of Texas, lead us through advertising read of our friends over at Prize Picks.
That's right, guys. Let me tell you about Prize Picks. They're America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 5 million members. With Prize Picks, you can turn $10 into $1,000 in a single game watching your favorite sports this summer. You just have to pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and you're locked in. The best part is that Prize Picks is available in more than 30 states across the country, including right here in the great state of Texas. You can download the app today, use code ONTEXAS, and they're going to give you a first deposit match of up to $100. And guys, it's nearly time for the NBA Finals, and much like the SEC, it just means more when it comes to Prize Picks. The games mean more. The star players mean more. You get boosted payouts on select basketball stars that you won't find anywhere else. And for the NBA Finals, well, they have a promotion that you guys have to absolutely jump on. If Jason Tatum scores 1 point, just 1 point, you win that selection. They also have a Derek Lively promotion going on currently where if he gets 1 assist, you win. I'm all over that. Those are no-brainers. But I'm also adding Kyrie to have less than 24 points and Luka to have more than 31. And if that hits, I win nearly 7 times my money. So to join me in those picks or to make your own, remember to download the app, use promo code ONTEXAS. They're going to give you that first deposit match of up to $100. And that's Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. And I just want to show real quick, guys, this is the thing that they're doing here. Jason Tatum, 1 point. That's all you got to do there. Go there, download the app, use our promo code ONTEXAS and select that. That's 99% off of what his normal total would be. So got to jump all over that, man. Win you some money and good luck to you.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Okay, y'all. Well, as you said, Bobby, we are waiting for Coach White. He should be on here momentarily, but we also have a couple of super chats that we can knock out while we wait on him. And let's do this super chat here from Blake. He says, do former coaches ever negatively recruit their previous school?
It's actually a great question. The best coaches don't negative recruit, period. They get a point across in a very well-communicated way without actually saying anything negative about the competition. I think that's the main thing to know. But purposefully negative recruit, like a coach says, you know, I was over at school X 7 years ago, and you don't want to go over there for this reason, and that reason. The best recruiters don't. That is not a positive. That means you're worried about your own product you're selling. So you talk to Bobby, you talk to enough college coaches, that is the opposite of what they ideally want to do.
I think it's opposite.
That opens them up more.
Here's what a very good recruiter once told me, though. He goes, is it negative if it's true? It's like, is it negative if I'm at Vanderbilt and there's only 10,000 people in the stands and I'm going to, you know, Auburn or Texas or Florida or Georgia, and I say, gee, there's more fan support here. Is that negative recruiting or is that just flat truth? To Jerry's point, though, guys don't want to do that, especially not if they've been at an elite institution. It's very rare that a person would be at a Texas or an LSU or a Florida or a USC and then down talk that, because frankly, those guys, most of them, they eventually want to be head coaches at one of those institutions. And the minute you start down talking the other institution is the minute that group gets institution gets taken off the list of you ever being considered. So there's a little bit of a professional courtesy there afforded. Although I will say that some guys tend to think that it's fair game if it's true, and they stretch maybe what is truth versus fiction there.
One of my favorite recruiting stories ever, and cut me off when Coach White gets here, Blake, if I go too long on this, said it was Albert Hardy coming out of Galena Park. His head coach was Mike Coker at the time, and he took him up for a visit to Texas. And I actually ran into Albert Hardy, he's the offensive coordinator at Beaumont United, for Texas fans that have lost track of Albert, part of the national championship team, good friend of Vince Young. But he committed to Mack Brown at the visit, and Coach Coker called me driving home, said, hey, letting you know Albert's going to commit to Texas. And I said, why did he commit? And Albert said, I don't know. Coach Coker pretty much said, hey, man, he sliced up the competition without saying a negative word. Mack Brown did. And he had that kid. He had Albert Hardy convince Michigan's not where you want to be. This isn't where you want to be. This isn't where you want to be, without saying a negative word about any of those programs he was considering. And when Albert Hardy was like, why'd you commit? I don't know. That's good recruiting.
Well, Blake, thank you for the super chat. We appreciate that. And I think Coach White is ready. I'm going to bring him on in. Coach White, congratulations, first off.
Well, thank you very much. It was an exciting night. So, yeah, a lot of fun.
1-0 on a what do you even call that? Was it? It wasn't like a suicide squeeze, but it looked like you were trying to get it done, get somebody across the plate, and then Alyssa Washington took matters into her own hands and used her speed to get across the plate in the seventh inning. What was the play call there? And take us back what you're thinking whenever the bunt doesn't get past the pitcher, all that stuff.
Yeah, it was what we call a safety squeeze. So it was basically a read by the base runner to see if they could make it or not make it. And, you know, she went like quite a way down and then realized that the pitcher made the play or could make the play on her and decided to kind of get into a rundown. And, you know, at worst, we would end up with the same thing with second and third and just one out. That would be the worst. But obviously a great pickle to get in. And we practice that all the time. It's like the old, the show, I can't remember what they're called, the pickle rundown. So it was like a snowball fight out there. But it was a lot of fun. Obviously came out on the right end of it, and it was a great slide at home plate.
In a game like that, Coach, those 0-0 into the seventh, there's going to be a number of tremendous defensive plays, right, to keep a game at 0-0. Can you talk about your left fielder? Made a number of big plays. The fearlessness she plays with, I've noticed something you can't coach. It's something you just have. So can you talk about your defense and some of those plays and kind of your left fielder, because she's tremendous.
Yeah, well, not only her, but also Caden Henry in center field made another great play as well. And I've said this before, I think this is probably the best outfield I've had as far as range and ability to catch balls in front of them and to the side. But Bella Dayton, we call her postseason Bella, you know, because she seems to step up her game in those situations and just loves it. I mean, the catch she made sliding towards the fence was fearless, like you said, and we needed that. And it's a lift. I mean, it just, if you're pitching, and we talk about they've got your back, and that's just an example of she's got your back. It was great.
For people that are unaware, Mike White, Texas softball coach, the Longhorns will be in the national championship. The opponent is to be determined. They play tomorrow, I believe, Coach, right? Whether it's OU or Florida.
Yes. Yeah.
And here's the question I have for you. You go into the Super Regionals against A&M, and, I mean, A&M hits some bombs against you. Your team shows some resiliency. You fight back. But all of them, you know, people, they put some runs on the board against you. And you have to – your offense has to come alive to keep you alive in the College World Series hunt. And then you get to – or you get to – I almost said Omaha. You get to Oklahoma City, and nobody scores a run against you yet. I mean, what the heck is going on with your pitching? You beat Stanford 4-0, then came back and beat Florida 10-0, and then – now, Stanford again last night, 1-0. I mean, you guys are on fire right now for the game.
Giving up a hit a game.
Yeah.
Well,
what's going on?
You know, that's a good question, but I think Patty Ruth Taylor, our pitching coach, along with myself, takes a lot of credit for that, working with the pitchers and making the adjustments and good game plans, and it's going to be executed. But I think the pitchers are stepping up and, you know, maybe getting our hitters backs a little bit, but it was great to come on the right end of a pitcher's duel. I mean, Niger Canada is unbelievable, really tough to hit. I mean, you could see that the weekend before where she got beat, like she gave up 6 runs against LSU and throws 2 shutouts. I mean, that tells me a lot about a pitcher's character. But, you know, I mean, it's about scoring more runs than the other team, and we're finding ways to do that right now.
Can you talk about Tegan a little bit? Like, that's a big moment for her in a game that gets you to the national – championship series. What did you see in her makeup as a recruit that's kind of carried through 20-2 this year as a freshman? But just what you saw in her makeup, obviously you've worked with her from the pitching perspective, but what did you see with that makeup that said, yeah, she's one of those that can help us get to that ultimate goal?
Yeah, she seemed unflappable. You know, like nothing really worried her too much. You couldn't really tell if she was up or down. You know, and she's starting to show a little more emotion right now, and I think that's a good thing. You know, even now and then you'd want to check her pulse for a heart rate, you know, so, you know, show me something. But what I'm seeing right now, just the growth in her just in the last half of the season has been her ability to calm her nerves a little bit. I think that sometimes you kind of say, well, I'm a freshman. You start listening to this all the time, like, I'm a freshman, I shouldn't be this good. And it's like, yeah, you're the best pitcher, you know, and so we saw that in her character, that she had this ability to just stay calm and pitched, you know, and take matters into her own hands. And she's been doing that lately.
Hey, Coach, we got a question in the chat. It's actually a great question. This is the first year in Texas softball history that y'all have named the team captain. That captain, of course, Alyssa Washington. Can you tell us a little bit about what made you guys decide to do that and why y'all picked her?
Yeah, I mean, typically in the past, we say, you know, that we've had basically the senior classes being the captains or the leaders, but without naming them that. And, you know, sometimes that can cause some confusion, just like having too many chefs in the kitchen, so to speak. And just the ability for Alyssa to kind of broach all areas of the team. And so we decided to put it out to the team and said, hey, if you're going to name a captain, have one leader, who would it be? And the team picked Alyssa. So that told us something right there. And then, of course, the coaching staff felt the same way. And just so it could be clear communication between the staff and the team. And she's been able to do that for us.
Hey, Coach, we had another question from the chat. And I'm not asking you to give away who's pitching. But my question was, is it going to come down to who you play, Oklahoma or Florida, as part of that decision on who you go with?
Yes, it very well could be. You know, but we haven't used Lali Gutierrez yet. You know, she's itching to get in there. That's one. Mac Morgan obviously had great starts. Tegan's obviously pitching well. And, you know, so, you know, Estelle Check hasn't seen the mound yet. But, you know, Estelle's going to be more of a relief role for us. And, of course, same with Sophia Simpson. But it'd be one of those first three I named that's going to start. And some of it will depend on what we see with the other team we play.
I had one last question for you from the chat. Somebody wants me to ask about recruiting. I'm guessing you field more calls than you can take at this point in recruiting.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, we've got a pretty good live hotline right now, you know, as far as getting into good recruits. And we're so excited for another pitcher coming in this year, Cambria Salmon. She's going to be awesome, along with Brister and middle infielder. They're trying to replace, but it's a very small class. But in 25, I can't talk about that class, but that class is going to be one of the top in the country for sure. So we're really excited about what the future is holding for us.
All right. We got to play something for you, Coach, and get your reaction. You got to tell us what you were feeling when this happened last night. Play it up, Blake. What was going through your head when that umpire is called safe?
Yeah, I think I was going, but go back. Yes, let's go. You know,
Coach, thanks for your time today, man. Good luck. I know you're going to be watching the Oklahoma-Florida contest to see who you guys got. But thanks so much, and good luck on Wednesday, Coach. And we'll be rooting for you here at On Texas Football.
Hey, thank you so much. Welcome.
All right, Hookem.
Thanks, Coach.
Good guy. Mike White.
Awesome guy, Coach. 55 wins, tied for most in program history. So that win 56, which they'll get, I believe, will be a new school record as well. Look, he's got, I jokingly said, but you know they're getting more calls than they can field. I mean, that's just the bottom line, whether that's high school recruiting, whether that's portal interest, what have you. I mean, Texas softball's in a great, great place. And, you know, the question for the chat here I have on that, who would you rather play, Oklahoma or Florida? Would you want the chance to end Oklahoma's run, or do you want Florida to end their run and then play Florida? It's an interesting question.
They run ruled Florida. I think, you know, my heart, you know, as far as my blood pressure says Florida. I'll just put it that way. My you know, competitive instincts say Oklahoma because you always want to beat the Sooners.
Yeah.
That's where I would come out. Right. All right. Hey, Jerry, it's time for you, buddy. Yep. Omaha Steaks. Tell folks how they can get a discount to the nation's number one purveyor of steaks online.
Look, guys, I'm just here to tell you Omaha Steaks with everything they sent was fabulous. Tremendous. Hot dogs included, all of it. Everything received was awesome. So with Father's Day right around the corner, what do you give the man that has everything? Easy. You give him an experience he'll never forget. You give him Omaha Steaks, because a world-class dad deserves a world-class steak. That's pretty simple. Father's Day experts at Omaha Steaks have made it easy to put a smile on the big guy's face this summer with hand-selected gift packages starting at just $89. Just go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code ONTEXAS, all caps, at checkout for an additional discount when you shop gourmet gift packages for Father's Day. With Omaha Steaks, the possibilities are endless. Endless flavor, check. Endless variety, check. Endless value, check, check. Truly, they have perfected more than steak, and your dad is guaranteed to love every bite. Pick from premium proteins like the juicy pork chops, air-chilled chicken, and the beefy burgers, which were tremendous, by the way. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code ONTEXAS, all caps, to get exclusive savings. Shop for unforgettable gifts that are guaranteed to make Dad's day. Because if there's one thing Omaha Steaks knows, it's dads want steak. Promo code ONTEXAS at checkout to save on exclusive packages starting at just $89.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Okay, guys. Well, we got a lot more to get to here, and we got a couple of super chats that we still got to knock out. Ryan Nelson, he says the winner of the Miami Florida game gets the golden toilet.
Hey, by the way, Matt Hayes was early season games the first week. I mean, it's pretty much Notre Dame at A&M, right? Elko has a chance there to do something big to start his tenure at A&M. Marcus Freeman has a chance to have a huge road win to really vault them as a strong playoff contender, because the rest of that schedule isn't that tough for Notre Dame. And then Florida-Miami. I mean, Billy Napier has to win that game. I mean, we've been talking about the FPI, and we're going to talk about this as the SEC season moves along, because Florida plays at Texas. But 11 of their games, 12 games, are against top 50 teams in the latest FPI. And that's never happened before in college football. He has to win that game. And what, like Matt said, if Cristobal loses that game and then Napier goes on and gets fired that year, then Miami fans are going to start to question, hey, man, we're in the aisle strong. What's going on here?
Yeah, I was interested in what Matt Hayes had to say too, Jerry. Favorite stadium, LSU. I think that makes sense. We, you know,
that night for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it just makes sense. I mean, that's just the way that is. Then best fans, Auburn. Texas won't see them this year. Worst fans, Florida. I think he's heard Boo Birds in Gainesville before as part of that. Weirdest fans. Maybe I coaxed him into that, but, man, that was a layup.
That was a layup.
That was not – I mean, was that not a layup? He should have just gotten that one right off the bat.
I'll say the crazy thing about LSU, too, sometimes it's more fun if they're not good, because, man, you want to talk about people that hate their coach when they're losing.
Woo!
That sometimes it's a little – it can actually be more fun to be in that stadium when things aren't going well.
One other super chat that we need to hit on, guys, and Freelance Society, we appreciate it. He says West Texas 6A high school football has less talent now, or I guess more asking a question, do they have less talent now? It's been a while since a school won a title, I think. Odessa, Midland Lee, Abilene Eagles, etc. Jerry, I'll start by saying I think it's just the schools they're facing in DFW and Houston have more talent, faster talent, more elite talent.
Well, yeah, I think that's the thing. It's the elite talent. There hasn't been the great players come through those schools. I mean, think back to Cedric Benson and Eric Winston on those Midland Lee teams, how talented they were. They had a couple of special players that went out and dominated on Friday nights and dominated when they had to dominate. I mean, Cedric Benson, obviously one of the best running backs this state's ever produced and the University of Texas produced. Roy Williams, special talent through Odessa Permian. I don't think those schools have the depth of talent they once had. But to your point, I think the growth in DFW, and the same thing's kind of happened in the Golden Triangle for the Beaumont Westbrooks of the world. That growth in the Houston area, right? Those schools have blown up in terms of enrollment, so they've also blown up in terms of depth of talent. So I think that's kind of what the old Little Southwest Conference is up against these days. But, you know, look, I don't think – I'd be surprised. I'm not going to say never. I'd be surprised if we saw a team come out of West Texas that had guys on the level of Cedric Benson and Eric Winston
Hey, Jerry, I've got a little bit different take. A little bit different. The coaching in West Texas – in my opinion, like when I first started 30 years ago, I thought it at times was superior to the coaching you'd see in Houston and or Dallas.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be, but that has changed. Like it is equal. Some places are better at all this other stuff. Some people saying the oil field effect, that certainly had a piece to do with it. A lot of new families moving there. I had a friend of mine that moved from Houston to Amarillo, for example, and played at Canyon High School back in the day. Ended up playing at Texas Tech way back in the day. So that happened. There was an oil field effect, but there was a coaching change there too. They had more staff on there. They had, I mean, they got away with a little bit on.
They were ahead of the game.
Yeah, they did some things. So my point being, it wasn't just personnel 30 and 40 years ago. It was also They were ahead of the game on the little things, almost like Nick Saban versus some of his contemporaries that have now caught up to his game. And I just want to put that out there because Benson and Winston were difference makers, right? Those are different cats. You know, Abilene's had some good players through the years of late. So we'll see how it goes. But I don't think that that difference in coaches exists anymore anywhere in the state, by the way.
Yeah. The best guy going's at Carthage, and he's got really strong competition.
Yep. All right, guys, let's move on here. We've had a lot of questions regarding the new Dave Campbell's cover that was announced yesterday. And Quinn Ewers is on there, but people are wanting to know, do y'all think they got it right?
Absolutely. Who else would be Sark versus Elko? I mean, look, this is Texas football. It's not TCU football.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, and they have the proof. You know, Texas football is an astute organization. They know that Texas and Texas A&M, a cover with those guys is going to sell appreciably better than ones with other schools. It's a fact of life, and I do think they got it right. I don't know if I like the title Rivalry Reborn, but I definitely think they've got the cover right.
Well, they got the cover right from the rivalry renewing and marketing. That was smart. If they'd gone any other direction, I think it would have been a mistake.
I mean, it's a historic rivalry that's getting restarted. There's no doubt. What are people saying out there, Blake, that made you wonder if they got it right?
That was actually a question. Did y'all? I couldn't find the question in the queue there, but I do remember seeing it a minute ago. Oh, right here from King Me. Do you think Dave Campbell got the cover right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I could have seen somebody like Sark versus Elko because it's so that magazine is so coaching oriented as it relates to high school sports that I could have seen Sark versus Elko, but it definitely had to be Texas versus Texas A&M.
You know why I liked it? It put the players that played Texas high school football on that cover.
That's true too.
And because here's the one thing I've looked at with what's missed out of that rivalry. Is I do think, and it's part of A&M moving to the SEC, it really opened up the state more so than ever, even though more people are moving into Texas, so there's less allegiance to Texas and Texas A&M. But the kids for the last decade have missed that buildup, that rivalry game, and all that water cooler talk, the locker room talk, and it hurts the state of Texas in recruiting. Now that that's back, and both schools position. Look, here's the reality, and I mean, Texas fans will call me crazy for this, but I don't really care. Both those teams, when we hit a 16-team playoff, should be in the playoff. They're too equipped from facility standpoint, from NIL standpoint, from degree standpoint. They're too equipped to both of those schools should recruit top 10 classes. And should be in the college football playoff 4 out of every 5 years. I mean, that's to me, it's just a reality. And does that put a lot of expectations on both? Sure. But that's the way they should be. They're both fully equipped to have success nowadays in college sports, in college football, Bobby.
I agree with that. I think both teams are set up for success. I think Texas has a little lead right now, and they need to capitalize on it.
And by the way, how much fun – well, it'll be fingernail biting for some, but how much fun will it be? I mean, really. Let's just say A&M's 8-3. And let's just say Texas by chance is 10-1. How much fun would that game be at A&M at the end of the year if A&M actually – oh, wow, we have something to play for here. We might sneak into the back door of a playoff if we win this game. I mean, think about the buildup to that game this year. If both teams are having really good seasons and there's a shot that both teams could make the playoffs. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just saying if. Just think about the buildup to that game. We've missed this for too long.
Yep, 100%. Okay, guys, we got time for a few more questions here as it's been a very action-packed show today. But let's take this one from Elaine Roker, and he says, if we have a star-studded receiver class, do you think we will see transfers at the position?
I think you're going to see it regardless.
Yeah.
That's just the way of college football now. there are certain positions. If you have, I mean, look, there was some talk that Ryan Niblett might transfer this offseason, Jerry. You and I both heard it. He decided to stay. DeAndre Moore, what happens if he doesn't find a way onto the field this year? It's just, I think it's just going to be natural. And we also don't know what the scholarship numbers are even going to look like. I mean, there's, I think no matter how star-studded this receiver class is or isn't, which it looks pretty good at this time, I think that you're going to see transfers at that position. You just will. I don't think that we're not going to go. We can't have our head in the sand or have this hubris about us that nobody's going to transfer because we're the University of Texas. That doesn't work anymore. That's gone for every team in the country.
Hey, Blake, can I hit a couple of recruiting questions real quick?
Yeah, definitely.
A little recruiting speed dating here. Richard Stark asked early, should we be worried about Brandon Brown and Zion Williams to LSU? I think Texas and LSU are the battles for both of those. They both made their official visit to LSU's huge weekend last weekend. But Brandon Brown will be at Texas the 14th through 16th, Zion the 21st through 23rd. Both classes are going to take big numbers on the D-line. LSU could take up to 5 or 6, I hear. So that could that play into it? Maybe. We'll see. But I think they're going to be battles. Ivory Martin, I know it's a stretch. They're happening in recruiting. Would it be a shock if Devin Chance has flipped to Texas? I would be surprised, but they pick up the phone when Texas calls. So you just got Sark's going to recruit through the whistle. So we'll see what happens there. What role do team facilities play in recruiting, and how does Texas stand up when compared to our rivals? Bobby, wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I think team facilities just 2 years ago played a huge role. I don't know if they play as huge a role anymore, not for the top level guys. I think it's a customary thing, but NIL is for the elite level players. I think NIL is just as important, if not more so. Now for the rank and file, I think it does have an effect, but facilities right now, Jerry, not as important as they were just 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think kids get out and see everything nowadays. And I think NIL has definitely changed the game. Somebody asked that somebody has Texas ranked the 15th ranked recruiting class in 2025. I think that may be a little low because I think Lance Jackson will be a riser in rankings. I think a couple of offensive linemen will be risers as seniors in the recruiting rankings. So I think Texas is probably sitting around 12 right now if you had to sit there and break it down and look at other guys and who can move in recruiting rankings. But where Texas will be come August 1 will be a different story. What's the Zane Petty? What's the reason for getting Myron in earlier? I think Texas wants to see where they're actually at with a couple of these guys, Josiah Sharma, Myron Charles, make their big runs here this weekend. Because reality is, originally it looked like Sharma, Charles, Brandon Brown, Kevin Wynn could all be June 14th through 16th guys. I think having two guys each weekend might be kind of smart than Zion Williams. DJ Sanders, who's not in that top tier group, he's a second tier group guy, but a guy that's a developmental prospect on 21st through 23rd. So I think that's kind of breaking those up a little bit more time because living rent free asked, does smaller weekend bode well for more personal time with recruits? I think on the D line, it's going to be helpful there. I think because Jeff Banks is part of that Myron Charles recruitment as well. So this stuff factors in. Jeff Banks has Caleb Edwards this weekend at tight end, Myron Charles. You know, you bring in Myron Charles on June 14th through 16th. I mean, DeCorian Moore's there that weekend. Jeff Banks has more on his plate that weekend versus this weekend where he has two guys on his plate. Not that he doesn't help with other guys, but I do think it. I do think it matters.
Hey Jerry, before we get going, I want to ask you on Michael Terry because you mentioned him at the outset of this, and I really thought Texas on the outside looking in on him for whatever reason. But the fact that A&M and Texas both recruiting him kind of as a, you know, athlete, I think it evens the field. And you mentioned Texas maybe as an H-back / tight end, whatever you want to call Amari Nyblack in this offense. And it got me thinking, he's 6'3", going to be about 220, 225.
Oh, he'll be 230 plus.
Easy. Okay, so that's not a receiver body unless you're A.J. Brown or a guy like David Boston back in the day.
Yeah.
And he's just not – he doesn't have A.J. Brown's speed, does he? I mean, that would be
phenomenal. Well, I mean, he has 10.77, 10.8, 100-meter speed. But I just don't think that's what he is long term. I mean, I don't think that's where he's going to project. I think – look, I said earlier, I think A&M and Texas are the top two. He loves Oregon, but after you take that visit, that reality sets in. If you're in San Antonio, for those parents, man, that's hard to get to and hard to get back from. And how do you fit all that into a schedule? So that's the tough thing that Oregon faces over the long haul in recruiting. Now, they recruit very well, Dan Lanning is, but just with some kids, it's hard to get there. And so for some parents, that's going to be an issue. So that takes it. He's not going to Nebraska. So that takes it, barring a major change. So that takes it to A&M in Texas, which he's visiting Texas this weekend, A&M the next weekend. I hear A&M. Both are telling him, athlete, we think you can play a lot of positions. We'll figure it out once you get here. They're both telling the same thing. I think A&M likes him as that rush linebacker, that outside guy that's 6'2", 6'3", 230, 235, 240-pound, long-arm, athletic outside backer. I think Texas could see him as a tight end or in that position as well. So he wants to play wide receiver. I just – look, I'll come on here and tell you guys if I'm wrong. I just don't think that's what he is long term. I don't think – I think once the circle of people around him, those college coaches, wherever he goes, gets with him, I think they will can let him know, look, this is where your career best path is. Because he's not – hard-headed from the person I talked to at 8 this morning. He's not hard-headed, steadfast. I'm only playing receiver. That's all I want to do. He just said, I want a shot at it. That's what I prefer. So since he's not closed-minded to other positions, I think that adds value to him as a recruit.
Yeah, and he is out of Alamo Heights in San Antonio area. Probably one of the more highly recruited San Antonio players in quite
some time. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
So, interesting. Interesting there. Texas has not had a lot of success in San Antonio in the last decade. A lot of guys have been going to A&M from San Antonio. So interesting to see if Sark and his crew can change that trend at this point in time.
All right, guys, this will be the final question for today. We got to get out of here pretty quick, but we've talked about, you know, best places to go, best fans, worst fans. But Odin Horns wants to know, what do you think the best tailgate will be in the SEC? He thinks probably Ole Miss, but what's y'all's opinion on that as we wrap this thing up?
I think that he, you know, I agree with that in some respects because it's definitely the best setup, the Grove is. But LSU is an all-day affair. I mean, they start cooking the gumbo early. and they add beer to it. You know, it gets added, the beer gets added to the gumbo as it boils. So I think LSU is going to be great. I think obviously Ole Miss is going to be great.
What was Alabama like last year, Bobby? You were there all day.
It was tremendous, but mostly because we had our own tent that kind of like collapsed all the Texas fans into one for the Texas One Fund. So it was really terrific there along with the guys at Surly Horns. So I personally liked it a lot, but I get the feeling that we're going to say that about a lot of SEC places. That's one of the things about the SEC that makes it strong is you're going to go have a great tailgate experience one day at Florida and or Alabama or Auburn or Arkansas, wherever, right? A lot of passionate fans in the conference, more so than the Big 12, in my opinion.
Okay, y'all, that's going to do it for today's episode of Coffee and Football presented by Texas Electricity Ratings. We want to thank them for sponsoring today's show along with Omaha Steak and Prize Picks. We also need to thank our guest, Matt Hayes, along with Coach White for joining us and talking to us for a little bit. That was awesome on both parts. And I got to thank you all for tuning in. We want to thank a very special thanks to Jack as well for the huge super chat. That was awesome. And thanks for all the other super chats too. So,
89 days from the season opener.
88
days. On the porch, Sorrell should have been here this morning. It's 88 days. And by the way, some summer workouts began yesterday. Texas posted some photos of those. We'll have more on that this week.
Yep. And I want to say, please join us if you get a chance on ontexasfootball.com. Lots of recruiting news and notes going into this weekend and coming out of last weekend. Jerry and the crew putting up a lot of notes right now on individual players. If you don't want to miss out, please check that out. Jerry and CJ will also be back today here on Texas Football video and podcast with a recruiting breakdown as well. But if you get a subscription right now to ontexasfootball.com, it's $20 off if you use the code OTFOG. That's OTFOG. Again, $20 off on a one-year subscription. It's only $39.95 right now using the code OTFOG on texasfootball.com.
Thank you, Jack Lala, by the way.
Yeah, huge.
For the support.
And thank you all for tuning in. Thank you for the support. If you haven't already, we would love for you to hit that like and subscribe button, ring the bell so you're notified anytime that we post content. And then, as Bobby said, be sure to head on over to ontexasfootball.com. As we can't be on here all the time, unfortunately. I wish we could do a 24/7 live stream, but it just ain't happening. So head on over to ontexasfootball.com. So for Bobby Burton and Jerry Hamilton, I'm Blake Monroe, and we'll see you tomorrow morning.
Hook 'em.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.